imagine, if you will, from birth, being terrorized, being tortured, being followed, stalked, being made to feel like you don't belong here. And imagine what that does for a person mentally, psychologically, emotionally, energetically, and physically. And to have that done over the course of your entire life, you can't not expect that to have some type of an effect.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis. And today, Clay Boykin and I are having another podcast. Clay, you are?
I am in search of the new compassionate male.
How wonderful. And I am along with you. I'm walking beside you as I'm learning. And we have, as we turn the corner, run into John Fleming. Hello, John.
Hello, Dennis. Hello, Clay.
John, one of the things that Clay and I have been talking about over our lives, I'm 72, Clay is in his 60s, you're our younger brother. As we're going along, we're understanding how much is not being talked about, that needs to be talked about. And here comes you, with you and your partner in your program of Conscious Conversations. Open that topic up for us. How you got there, why was that there, and why is it so important? And let us chime in.
Sure. I'll just go right to it. I guess it was, three, four years ago. Everybody's rolling along in life, and I start hearing about reports that a man was shot and killed in his car by two police officers. And I was startled by the news. And once I was able to get to a TV and was able to watch the news and then saw a replay of the incident, I was stunned and shocked. Philando Castile is sitting in the front seat of his car.
Yes.
On the passenger side, and his girlfriend or wife is driving, and he's got his son in the back seat. And they got pulled over by two police officers. The police officers came over to the passenger side, and Philando, they were being questioned, and Philando said, "I'm reaching for my wallet," and a gun goes off. And you start to see blood on his white shirt, and he kind of slumps over, and I just thought, oh my God, they just shot that man. And his girlfriend is filming the whole thing. And I just thought, is this really happening? What is going on? And the, bless the kid's heart, he was just, she was really kind of going on and on, because I guess she was kind of posting this live on Facebook. I'm not sure what exactly was going on, but she was kind of frantic, but still collected enough to really speak truthfully about what had just happened. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you know, we hear in the background, "It's okay, mommy, I'm okay." And that just about broke my heart. So yeah, that did a number on me, because I think about the number of times I've been stopped by law enforcement, and I have a list, a long list. And literally when it happens, I feel the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, because is this going to be the day, you know?
John, I grew up in South Texas, so I actually witnessed from the white male privilege side, Jim Crow, actually saw colored and white drinking fountains, saw separate movie entrance, actually rode on a bus. The bus was integrated. But when we got to the bus station, the Continental Trailways bus station, got off the bus, there was a white and a colored waiting rooms. Now, that was, I know I'm 72, I know I'm old, but that was not that long ago.
I get the sense and feeling that my parents kind of sheltered my sister and I from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I remember going to integrated schools.
Where did you go to school in elementary and high and junior high? And
well, I grew up in Austin. I'm originally from Marshall, Missouri, but I was just born there.
Got it.
My dad was stationed there long enough for me to be born, and then we were shipped off to Europe. And my dad was stationed in Iran for a couple of years. We lived in Turkey for a couple of years. And then by the time I turned four, my mother came back with me stateside because her mother wasn't doing well. And we moved to Austin in 1971. And I've been here ever since.
Mm. Okay, well, that gives us an arc. And those who know of Austin during that time know that it was a different city.
Very different city.
At that time.
Yeah. Grew up in Austin. Went to school in Austin. I went to Andrews Elementary over in East Austin. Spent a year at Wynn Elementary, but ended up moving through my elementary school days through Andrews Elementary. Went to Blanton Elementary, which was a sixth grade center. It had a kindergarten grade and a sixth grade. So it's like a preparatory school before you went into junior high. And I went to Pierce Junior High. And ultimately ended up going to Reagan High School because we lived right in the neighborhood where the school physically was located. And that was about the time that school busing was implemented. And what I didn't know until much later was that the whole reason for busing was because of Austin Independent School District. I went to Reagan High School, which was a community school, was integrated. There were as many black students on that campus as there were white students. There was a good mix of so many other cultures on that campus, and everyone in the community was invested in the campus, the local businesses, the neighborhoods, you name it, that school had a lot of support and was very successful on so many levels. And I was very proud to have gone to school there because I was just commenting to somebody the other day about how it makes me, I feel very proud when I'm living vicarious through my former classmates on Facebook and see some of the amazing things that they're doing and how vocal they are about some of the injustices that we've witnessed over the last several years. We were a very socially conscious group of students from Reagan High School. So that's my experience in the public.
So you would have been a senior sometime in like about 88?
86. I graduated in 86. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, that gives us contextually. What were you doing in 86 at that time?
Oh, gosh, I had graduated from A&M in 76. I had spent 4 years in the Marine Corps and 4.5 years and had left the Marine Corps, finished my service requirement, and joined Motorola. So I was 6 years into Motorola here in Austin.
How was the racial demographics at Motorola in the corporate culture at that time?
Predominantly white. But, you know, you mentioned something earlier about Jim Crow. And I remember, now I'm 66, but I remember our family doctor in the 60s had a front entrance and a back entrance. And I didn't understand that. And it had colored entrance back there. And we loved our doctor. He was a good man. I was all, you know, but there was that separation there.
Well, that's the systemic. That's where the conversation comes in, John, is because what are the conversations that we need to have? What are you doing? I understand that you're at Unity Church of the Hills and you're having a program called Conscious Conversations.
Yes.
How did that come about, and what are you doing there? Could you help us?
With sure. That? So, like I said, back when Philando Castile was shot and killed, just shortly after that, like a week, 2 weeks later, there was this incident with the Pulse nightclub in Miami, which was a gay bar.
Oh.
There was a mass shooter there. That happened on a Saturday night. I was still distraught over the Philando Castile situation, and I didn't come out of the house for 3 days because I was feeling a lot of fear, anxiety, deep sadness, and grief because I saw with my own eyes a man shot and killed at point blank range. And that Sunday morning, the night after the Pulse nightclub incident, I came into church just a mess. In fact, during the first service, we did the opening song, and I'm on stage singing what is very much a very happy song that our congregation absolutely loves. And I was ugly crying on stage that morning in the middle of that song. And I could tell people were startled by me because I just wasn't hiding anything. After that service ended, in between services, Joni came up to me and she goes, "Are you okay?" I said, "No, I'm not." And she says, "Did you hear what happened last night?" I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, the shooter at the Pulse nightclub that shot and killed all of these LGBTQ people at this bar." And I said, "I kind of heard something about it, but I didn't really want to know anything else because I was already feeling some kind of way about what I had just witnessed a week
Trauma.
Ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so Joni went to Reverend Steve, our senior minister at the time, and kind of asked him, "Hey, did you know that this shooting happened and what it's done for a lot of people that this happened?" And Steve didn't know about it. And Steve instantaneously changed his message for the next service to address that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of church and minister we had at the time.
Yeah.
And so sitting in that second service, the energy in the room was palpable because Steve was dealing with it and just kind of acknowledging that, unfortunately, something like this has happened. It's horrible. And where my vantage point is in the sanctuary, I can see everyone and everything. And it mm-hmm. just kicked me in the gut because as I was looking around the room, I'm looking at friends that identify as I do as being gay, lesbian, whatever the case may be. And I kept feeling like, well, that could have been me. That could have been him. That could have been her. And this is not acceptable. Because that nightclub incident and Philando Castile have some similarities. Minority groups, if you will, that have had a history of being terrorized, tortured, chased, stalked, murdered, killed, and no one saying or doing anything about it. And so a couple of weeks went on and I was just really struggling, really having a hard time. And Joni came back to me a few days later and she said to me very quietly one day, she goes, "You know, I've been thinking," she said, I feel like you and I should be doing something. And I just said, yes. It just came out of my mouth. It wasn't me. But I was like, I don't know what I'm saying yes to, but I know I'm supposed to say yes.
So John, remind me, Joni at the time, she was a prayer chaplain, right?
Yes. She was my mentor as a mentor as a prayer chaplain.
Yeah, so. Joni and I were prayer chaplains together during that time.
Yeah.
When that started. And so I just wanted,
Yeah. So it was very clear to me that Joni had spent some time with her own thoughts and feelings about things, and she was acknowledging in me that she could tell that I wasn't okay, and she wanted to know more about it. And I just told her, look, I don't know how to put it into words. I said, what I can tell you is for the 3 days that I was in my house and I didn't come out, my thought was, if I walk out of this house, am I going to come back home alive? And having those thoughts were problematic for me on so many levels, mainly because in Unity, we talk about the truth. And we talk about everybody is inherently good because they are made and created in the image and likeness of God. That because we're made in the image and likeness of God, we're therefore one with God, and we are therefore inherently good too, because God is good. And so learning about the Unity principles, and I'm just kind of like, this totally goes against what we believe spiritually. Why am I having these dark, painful, very uncomfortable thoughts about my possible death? I don't want that to happen. Why am I focusing on it? But it couldn't escape it, because imagine, if you will, from birth, being terrorized, being tortured, being followed, stalked, being made to feel like you don't belong here. And imagine what that does for a person mentally, psychologically, emotionally, energetically, and physically. And to have that done over the course of your entire life, you can't not expect that to have some type of an effect.
Exactly. And for it to come to a boiling point at a time when you don't even know it's going to be happening, but suddenly it all came together at that moment.
Yes. And so Joni and I entered into a conversation about our feelings around things that had startling response within each of us for different reasons, but she was acknowledging her awareness of me as much as she was acknowledging the awareness in her that we had common ground on experiences of watching fellow human beings who we totally relate to, identify with, being brutally shot and killed.
Yeah.
That there's no, and it happens, and then everybody goes about their business, you know.
Yes, but that's where I'm asking is because you have an identification with not only Orlando and not only with the people in the Pulse nightclub, but it's your identification, and it appears as us for us as two elderly white men in the tribe, that it is when we are do not. I mean, I love the way that you said imagine, because we have to imagine, because it's not something that we experience. We actually have to have that active, imaginary, empathetic experience in order to be able to have that, have some connection to it.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because that is really what came to a head for me this past weekend. You know, after the George Floyd incident, I'd heard about it, and I immediately decided I did not want to hear it. I did not want to see it. I didn't really want to know about it because I didn't want to end up in that place I was in with Philando Castile and the Pulse nightclub shooting. What I can tell you about the weekend of that Pulse nightclub shooting and the Philando Castile situation, I said I didn't come out for 3 days because there was just an eruption of so many different emotions all at one time. Anger, fear, anxiety, frustration, sadness, deep grief, rage. And I didn't know what to do with it or how to process it. It was in my gut, solar plexus area. And it was overwhelming. There were times where I'm sobbing uncontrollably and I couldn't stop it. And by the third day, what I tapped into and realized, well, it's like, what is this? Is this mine? Is this my stuff? But I began to sink deeper into that experience and into my heart, and I began to realize that this isn't me or mine, but what it felt like, it felt ancestral. It felt like my great-great-grandparents, my ancestors who'd gone before me. It was like something had awakened for a short period. And I was tuned in, tapped into the spirits of ancestors that I've never met, who were in the civil rights movement, who came here as slaves, who lived through the civil war and whatnot. And it was almost like they were letting me know this isn't okay. And it was almost like I was getting a swift kick in the ass to do something. Hence Joni and the conversation that we had. And so Joni was really asking me about how I was doing because she genuinely really wanted to know, because she was aware that she had been observing that I was feeling some kind of way, and she wanted to know more about it. And she kept saying, tell me more. And so we had a conversation, and we had common ground in the experiences of what we were feeling, her tied to Pulse nightclub, me tied to Philando Castile. But she was saying, I want to support you as best I can, as much as I can, because I care about you. And that is what sealed the deal for me in my membership and my activity at Unity Church of the Hills. And so she kept saying, I really feel like you and I should be doing something. And I said, I kept saying yes. I said, Joni, I'm saying yes. I don't even know what I'm saying yes to, but I know I'm supposed to say yes. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to keep asking. I will support and work with you and stand by you. And so I asked, what is it? Faith Action of Central Texas is an organization that sponsors and hosts these quarterly or monthly gatherings of people from many different faiths.
Right.
And they have conversations on topics around spirituality. And I've been, they're called Red Table Talks. And I've been to them, and they were supposed to be having one on a Monday night, the weekend after the Philando, the Pulse nightclub shooting. And Joni and I had signed up to go. And I was at work that afternoon, and I get an email after I had registered saying it had been canceled. I thought, okay. Then I get another email from KLRU stating that they're having a gathering called ATX Together. Austin, Texas talks about race. And basically they had asked IACT to acquiesce and allow KLRU to kind of take this on, because what KLRU was going to do was facilitate a citywide conversation around race. And they had it at the old Austin City Limits Theater on campus at the PBS KLRU building. And so we registered to go. And when we got to that building, the communications building on campus, there was a long line of people waiting to get into the ACL theater at that time. And we got in, and I would say there was approximately 300 to 400 people on that Austin City Limits auditorium. And this gathering was facilitated by Judy Maggio, who's a former news anchor here in Austin, and Ron Oliveira.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one other individual whose name I forget, African-American male, but they were the ones with the mics. There were representatives from the Austin Police Department, the City Council, the NAACP, the Austin Chamber of Commerce, the Black Austin Chamber of Commerce. There were other community organizations that represented different communities from all over. There was a wide range of diverse people from all over Austin. It was stunning to see. And they had microphones set up, and then they started out by saying, we are here to have a discussion around a topic that many find very difficult. And we are going to do this, and we're going to film it, because we want this to be broadcast over all of the PBS stations in the United States. And I want to throw in here that KLRU PBS station here in Austin is the number one station in the United States.
Yep.
And I know that because I served as a member of the KLRU Community Advisory Board for 5 years, and I served 3 years as their board chair. And in that time, I was helping that community advisory board to establish a consistent level of membership, because I was noticing a lot of attrition. Some people get invited on, and then they'd be gone within months and never fulfill their time on the board because they had no terms. They had no bylaws. And mind you, that community advisory board is a federally mandated requirement. It's in the law. They have to have it. And so what I did was got a consultant, met with the board, and we brainstormed and did some brainstorming work over one weekend, and we created a set of bylaws. And those bylaws created this way of a recruitment of board members and board leaders to keep that community advisory board going on in perpetuity. And so this was kind of some of the work that I did that I feel I had a play in having this conversation around race to happen, because that's how active this city's KLRU station is. And it's very serious about its work, and it is the leading station in the United States. So once that conversation got started and they were just posing questions to the audience, you know, how is everyone feeling based on some of the things that we've seen in the news lately? And they were inviting people to come down to the mic and kind of speak their mind. But they had also given us some guidelines going in that when someone is speaking, we are going to listen to what they have to say. Give them that respect. And if you have something to say, you can approach any one of these three mics that have been positioned around the auditorium, and someone will address you, and they will be with you when you go to the mic. And then we'll offer opportunities from our panelists from the community to respond. And so as we moved into this, you could see people beginning to express their pain, their hurt, their fear, their disgust. And then you'd have someone from the police department respond. Someone else in the audience would respond. And you just, there was just this beautiful transaction with people. And I leaned over to Joni and I said, I think I know what we're going to be doing. I said, the universe just opened up the windows of heaven and showed us this is what we're going to do. We don't have to reinvent the wheel because it's already been done. And so we left that really inspired. And Joni and I spent one evening in Ellen Fannin's office, who was our executive director at the time of the church. And we sat in her office because she had a dry erase board. And she goes, so what are we going to do? What do we call it? And I said, it's a talk or a discussion. And she said, well, it's a talk or a discussion. And I was shaking my head. No. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
Because in my Leadership Austin days, we did some work around that. And I learned from that that a conversation is a transaction between one or more people. And there's a sharing of words. And the way you share those words is not just from speaking, but also listening. Mm-hmm. It's not so much what you give in your speaking, it's what you receive in your listening. And so we began to discuss, did a lot of critical thinking around what a conversation is. And there's some very spiritual aspects to that. What we acknowledged was that where two or more are gathered, there am I also, as the Bible states. And there's truth to that. But that we began to establish guidelines that I had gotten from my lessons with Leadership Austin, that they use talking tools. Whoever has the talking tool has the floor. No one can speak. And I like the idea of the talking tool, but I don't, because I feel right. like if we're present in the room, centered, focused, grounded, there's a knowing of whose turn it is to talk,
speak. Yeah.
And the person who's supposed to speak will know intuitively it's their turn.
Yeah.
And so we established the fact that when you speak, you honor the honesty of what you think and how you feel with the words of your mouth without intentionally hurting another person or group of people, period. And on the flip side of that, if someone is speaking, though, if you're one of the ones listening, that you listen with your ears, that you are present in the moment, in the room, in the space, focused your attention and intention on the person speaking. You're listening with your ears, but you're also listening with your heart, or the ears of your heart, which leads us to deep, active listening.
Right.
Because when you're listening from that perspective and that space within yourself, you inherently come with empathy and compassion. It's not something that you have to go to school to learn to do. It's not something that you have to practice. Well, it takes practice, but it's not something that you have to have a degree for. We've all come here fully loaded, fully equipped, just like the best car you could buy with all the bells and whistles. You came here equipped with that. You just forgot that you had it.
Yeah.
Because that's not what we are taught.
Yeah.
In our development.
It's our nature.
We have a tendency to temporarily forget because society has conditioned us to think otherwise.
Yeah.
And so when you're in that space of being impeccable with your words, if we want to go back to Don Miguel Ruiz's Four Agreements, being impeccable with your word, that you don't assume, that you don't take anything personally, and that you do your best in what you are speaking. And when someone is listening and paying attention and being with you in that space as you speak, there are three things that human beings want to know. Have I been heard? Have I been understood? And do I matter? And when we begin to connect and transact a conversation that way, everyone comes away with a knowing and an experience of knowing and understanding that they've been heard, that they've been understood, and that they matter. And so that was the conception of what we ended up terming a conscious conversation, because we have to be fully conscious and present. I've learned in Unity that another word, term, name for God is consciousness, with a capital C, because it means that we come with the same qualities of God, who is empathetic, who is compassionate, who is loving, and we are a representation of that with skin on it. No matter your color, your creed, your race, how you identify, we are that. And so we put this down on paper to kind of write down these guidelines. And by the time we were done, I looked at Johnny and I said, we're going to do this. We're going to do this here at UCOH, because she and I came to a convergence on an awareness that this church doesn't like to talk about uncomfortable things very much.
Mm-hmm. Particularly human of us.
Yeah.
Particularly race. Yeah. And, you know, I don't hide the fact that Unity Church of the Hills is a predominantly white congregation of a certain age.
Yep.
And Joni turned to me and she goes, I think we should. And I was kind of freaked out. I don't know if I want to do that, you know, because in my mind, I'm thinking about the level of resistance I've experienced in my life around this topic. Race is not something I like talking about. And I didn't feel comfortable with it, but I couldn't escape it because of what I had just witnessed at KLRU. Mm-hmm. And I had to trust the instincts of this thing that Joni and I were collaboratively mm-hmm. co-creating. Solidified it on the calendar. We had our first conscious conversation. I would say it will be 5 years ago, 4 years ago, this June. And
wow.
The first event had 50 people show up. And we put a big circle of chairs on the platform in the sanctuary. We started and we posed. We had some questions we wanted to ask to give people a chance to respond to. And there was a point within the first 15 minutes where you felt the group kind of sink in and relax. You just felt it. And there was a stillness and a sense of safety and commonality and common ground. And so we're coming up to the end of the first 15 minutes where people are giving their responses to the question that been asked. And then I was looking at the clock going, uh-oh, it's time to move on. And I didn't want to be rude, but I was going to be that guy to keep the time. And before I could open my mouth to go, okay, it's time to move on, the person that was speaking started talking and giving an answer to the next question. And I looked at Joni and she looked at me and I was like, okay, I think this is our segue into the next question. And that is exactly how the rest of the conversation went. I never once had to stop anyone to say, okay, we have to move on. The whole thing kind of orchestrated itself, which was proof positive that whenever two or more are gathered, there's always an additional mind present,
exactly.
An unseen mind present, orchestrating the whole thing. No one ever yelled over anyone. No one ever argued. No one ever talked over anyone. You never had multiple people talking at once. It was a very organized, divinely guided experience.
Conscious experience.
Conscious experience. And yeah. As it ended, there were so many people moved by that. And I had people come up to me afterwards when we concluded, or days and weeks after, emailing me saying things like, I never thought I would see in my lifetime me actually having a conversation around race.
Wow.
I thought, I can't believe that just happened. I've tried to do this before and it always ends up ugly and nasty and painful and uncomfortable. And so, thank you for doing this. And we did one online virtually about a month ago. And then a week later, the day after we did that one with UCOH, we get a call from Linda Whiteside, who's the minister at Unity of Georgetown. I think it's time for you guys to do another conscious conversation because they're asking. Because we've been out to Georgetown a couple of times and we're getting ready to do another one on Monday evening, the 15th, to connect and have a conscious conversation around the George Floyd experience and the fallout from that.
I think there's an opportunity here.
Yeah, because I've been assigned to reach out to you about connecting.
Well,
Tony goes, I think you should reach out to Clay. I said, I'm supposed to be meeting him tomorrow because I'm sorry, Clay. Joni and I and Robin Llewellyn, who's a member of the church, and she's a wonderful facilitator like yourself, Dennis, who is going to be partnering with us to facilitate this next conscious conversation. She's got some very specific activities that she's wanting to do with the group that kind of helps them go deeper into these feelings as we come back to our original topic, which was race.
All right. So here's my question, John. Take us through your journey from the Orlando and Pulse experience to the George Floyd experience, and how you have built yourself resiliently to deal differently than you would because of this experience that you've had over there, because of the value of conscious conversations?
Whew, that's a loaded question. I first have to acknowledge my love of God. It is my upbringing. I was raised in the church. My father was a powerful and strong praying man who was very outspoken about doing the right thing. And with his passion was for family, people, and children. He was a big advocate for education, children and education, and everyone getting a fair education. From that, from being steeped in the church and the experience of the Black church, I have to also acknowledge Unity Church of the Hills, because I was missionary Baptist for much of my childhood and early adulthood. And then I was a member at Mount Sinai Baptist Church for 20 years, very active in that church. But I was to a point where I felt like I kept hearing, it's time, it's time. And I was like, time for what? Ultimately, it was time for me to move on. And I ended up at Unity Church of the Hills. That's a whole other story and conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful for what I have gained and I learned and I experienced through the New Thought movement, which for me was teaching me about accountability within myself. That the thoughts and feelings held in mind create after their own kind. The third Unity principle says, we create the realities that we see based on what we think and how we feel, which ultimately said to me, if you don't like what you're seeing, you're the one empowered to do something about it.
Change your thinking, change
and
your
I
life.
Thought, what the hell kind of church is this? You're holding me accountable? Because that is not what is taught in the traditional faith traditions. You know what I mean? And so I was starting to really understand this new thought thing that you literally can create and manifest whatever you focus on by what you think and how you feel. And so I've really played with this. What the marriage between what you think and how you feel creates an energy or vibration that emotes into the world that makes you a magic, makes you a magnet to the thing that you're attracting in your life, the subject of the thoughts and feelings.
And so the John Fleming in 2020, as opposed to the John Fleming that started this,
in 95.
Right. So this is the healing arc that I want to talk about. What
yes.
conscious conversations do to you through your personal experience for
Thank
us.
You. Yes. So I get what you're saying now. I came to unity by divine design. I didn't leave Mount Sinai because something happened or they did something wrong or I was upset or mad. I just felt like something was telling me it's time to go, and I could not say no. And the minute I stepped into Unity Church of the Hills, I knew this is where I was supposed to be, even though I didn't really know anyone there. I had a couple of connections there. Like I said, that's a whole other story and conversation.
Right.
But that was when my healing process began. So being a black male who identifies as gay, who has lived a life of being ostracized, being ridiculed for not only of the color of his skin, but also how he identifies sexually, that was a double whammy of some pretty serious, deeply painful experiences. Not being seen, not being heard, not knowing that you matter, because so many aspects of your life that are crucial, critical to your personal growth and development, don't exactly see you the way that you came into this world as you are. And when I walked into Unity Church of the Hills, all they talk about is, we see you, we love you, we honor you, you are made in the image, you are the beloved of God, you're made in the image and likeness of God. And we honor the path that you're on, the journey that you're on, and they will walk with you. And this church doesn't talk its talk, it walks its walk. And it took me 3 years before I finally had accepted that I was a member there. I joined the very first day I arrived, but it took me 3 years to I intentionally stayed back and just observed. And I was part of the music team, but that's something that's just inherently in me. But beyond that, I was like, you're not going to go jump on some leadership group or join this team or whatever and just jump in. You're going to stand back and observe and pay attention. It was when my dad made his transition in February of 2013. I hadn't been to Unity in about 3 months because I'd spent the last 3 months with my dad, who was basically moving closer to his transition. And I knew it intuitively, instinctively. Everything in me was saying, this is coming. And my family, I think to a certain degree, was in denial about it.
Of course.
Because I would say, this is going to happen. Shouldn't we be doing this? And nobody would listen. And then it would happen. And then he'd look at me like, yeah, I said that. So once my dad transitioned, I went to church. He transitioned on a Tuesday evening. I went to church that following Sunday. That was a service where Steve came out onto the stage and he said that we were going to dedicate this service to in honor of John's father who just made his transition. And right after that, Penny C., who was the coordinator of the chaplain team, comes out and makes an announcement that we're at the time of the year in our spiritual community where we're looking for people who are interested in becoming a part of the prayer chaplain team. And I could feel my dad behind me nudging me saying, go.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And so I joined. In the time that I've spent at Unity, I've learned so much about who we are, not just as human beings, but who we are as spiritual beings. And just like a person that identifies as LGBTQIA plus, whatever the letters are, I don't know. We go through a process of coming out.
Yes.
But there comes a point where we have to reconcile our sexuality with our humanity. But I will dare say that we have to, I take it a step further, because if we're truly going to be self-actualized individuals who identify as LGBTQIA+, that there has to be a reconciliation of your spirituality with your sexuality and your humanity.
Hmm.
And Unity helped me to do that work. When I came to Unity, that's when I began to release guilt. That's when I began to release shame. That's when I began to release attachments, judgments. That was when I began to truly understand, search, explore what it means to love yourself unconditionally. Because as RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Exactly.
And I take it a step further because of Unity and say, if I can't be honest with myself, how in the hell can I be honest with someone else? And that's where I started doing my inner work around processing my feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
I was always deemed, and I've since learned, that I'm a highly sensitive individual. It is a scientific study in the world of psychology, in the counseling world.
Yes.
And when I feel things, I feel them to the 99th degree. So growing up as a kid who was very in his feelings, very expressive, and being told by your mother when your feelings get hurt and you are crying because you're just hurt and upset, and you're being told, why are you, you're so damn sensitive. Why, stop crying. Why are you crying? Or if I'm angry and I'm yelling, well, who do you think you're talking to? You're being disrespectful. And I'm watching everyone be in their feelings and expressive of how they feel, but I'm being shut down in mine. And I'm like, don't tell me to not feel that when I'm already feeling it.
God.
The hypocrisy. But
it is.
The pain of being told that in the midst of my feeling, and I've told people this before, it feels like somebody's cutting me 1,000 times over on my body with a razor blade and then dousing me with alcohol.
It's I got to jump in here for a second. I've got a mirror back to you, and Dennis, this is really important. John, you're talking about your journey into UCOH, into Unity Church of the Hills, mm-hmm. and that you hung back for 3 years, you know, and so forth. Well, let me tell you what I saw. I witnessed your presence when you were there singing, or when you would walk into the sanctuary. The energy in that sanctuary changes because of your authenticity, because as you're processing what you're processing and because of your sensitivity, you would show up in your energy, and it does, it connects, and people watch and people hear, and you're a servant leader in that congregation. And to me, you exemplify what I'm looking for, one of the expressions of a new compassionate male.
And I so agree. And this is, and when you see this circle of men that you're helping to invite in to be able to bring together, I hear my story coming out of your mouth through my iteration. It may be a different, it may be a different degree around the circle that's going to the one a different ray, but they're all identical. They're my experience to come to terms with my feelings, to be able to express who I authentically am as you are walking, to express who you authentically are, is the same damn journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's our common experience. Mm-hmm. And we men who are coming to be inclusive in this world of 2020 and beyond, because it is synergy. It is not a pie. It is bigger than as we bring people in. There's more than enough. Here you come. And then you come into my life. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Clay, God bless you. Oh, man. You two exemplify what we are doing here on the planet to bring out the best in each of us.
Thanks, Dennis. Well, John, you and I, so many times in the foyer, and, you know, our conversations there, and you as my prayer chaplain leaving a message for me every month, means a tremendous amount to me. And I have to tell you that last Monday night, there were 25 guys on our Zoom call, the Men's Fellowship Network, our Circle of Men. And we were expressing and trying to get in touch with our feelings about everything going on. And there something was, I left the call and you and I talked after that because, you know, you and I were going to talk. What I realized was, yeah, here were 25 privileged white males sitting in a circle trying to process our feelings about what's going on. What's wrong with that picture? And it's a question I've got in my mind is how do we move forward from here? And I'm very much intrigued with what you're talking about with a conscious conversation coming up in June, because there is a next evolution. There's something next for all of us. And,
yeah.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. And we shall. John Fleming, my first time meeting you, what a pleasure.
Oh.
And I look forward to continuing the conversation with you and having other opportunities to be able to interact and collaborate and walk beside you. And Clay Boykin, you know I love you and how proud I am to know you and to walk beside you. And we'll look forward to talking to all of you in this global, wonderful conversation next time.